Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, this is Tom Gilson, and this episode of ID the Future features the third part of a fascinating conversation the Hoover Institution's Peter Robinson had with Yale computer scientist David Galernter and Discovery Institute senior fellows Stephen Meyer and David Berlinski. It follows an essay Galernter recently wrote in the Claremont Review, causing a stir, as Galernter publicly broke with Darwinism in it. Here in part three, we hear the close of the discussion as the panel discusses Darwinism as a religion and what can happen to those who reject or even question it. The first voice you hear is Peter Robinson's.
I'm going to quote you once again, David Galernter. Darwinism is no longer just a scientific theory, but the basis of a worldview and an emergency religion for the many troubled souls who need one, close quote. Now, lots of people have invested lots of energy in discrediting Dr. Berlinski and Dr. Meyer over the years. You, Dr. Galernter, are a professor of unquestioned competence and achievement in computer science. And computer science is with it, baby. It is right at the middle of the new world we're creating. It's technocracy. We don't have to ask ultimate questions. We just have to deal with zeros and ones. It's totally rational. It's producing a cornucopia of new wealth. And now Galernter goes over to the other side?
He's been with us all along.
So what's the reception been at New Haven and in your profession, in academia? I mean, that's a serious question. What's going
on? Okay. I have to make a distinction between the way I've been treated personally, which is in a very courteous and collegial way by my colleagues at Yale. They're nice guys, and I like them. They're my friends. On the other hand, when I look at their intellectual behavior, what they publish, and much more important, what they tell their students, Darwinism has indeed passed beyond a scientific argument as far as they are concerned. You take your life in your hands to challenge it intellectually.
Yes.
They will destroy you if you challenge it. Now, I haven't been destroyed. I'm not a biologist, and you know, I don't claim to be an authority on this topic. But and you know, a book review is not the same as a book. It's just sort of a satellite around the book. Anyway, it remains the case that I have nothing personally to charge my colleagues with. But what I've seen in their behavior intellectually and at colleges across the West is nothing approaching free speech on this topic, is a bitter rejection, not just a sort of a bitter, fundamental, angry, outraged, violent rejection, which comes nowhere near scientific or intellectual discussion. I've seen that happen again and again. I'm a Darwinism. Don't you say a word against it or I don't want to hear you, period.
Which proves that you're attacking their religion, in effect.
I am attacking their religion, and I don't blame them for being all head up. It is a big issue for them, unquestionably.
Dr. Berlinski, who holds his doctorate in philosophy, I want to depart. This isn't strictly Darwin, but I'm indulging myself. This is a quotation that has struck me as compelling for a long time, but for a long time I've thought I really want to try it on Berlinski. So here we go. Okay, I'll try you. This is C.S. Lewis. Granted that reason is prior to matter, I can understand how men should come to know a lot about the universe they live in. If, on the other hand, I swallow the scientific cosmology, and for scientific cosmology, we may as well read the Darwinian theory of evolution. If I swallow the scientific cosmology, then not only can I not fit in religion, but I cannot even fit in science. Here we go. Here's the payoff on this. If minds are wholly dependent on brains, and brains on biochemistry, and biochemistry on the meaningless flux of the atoms, I cannot understand how the thought of those minds should have any more significance than the sound of the wind in the trees, close quote. He's onto something there, isn't he? Isn't consciousness the first question we have to answer?
Not mine.
Totally wrong. Just
it's not even the first question I would think of asking. Why does it seem so very compelling to you or C.S. Lewis? Consciousness, it's one of those things. It's certainly true that I'm conscious. I have my doubts about you and these two guys here, but those doubts really don't matter a whole lot. I'm prepared to welcome my friends as automata. Doesn't matter to me.
He's not onto a point, or he's onto something that's just uninteresting.
I'm not sure I understand the point. I mean, let's say...
Does this make any sense to you?
Makes sense to me. This is what bothered Thomas Nagel, and why he's become a skeptic of neo-Darwinism, is that minds are real things. And if you can't give an account of where they came from or what they do that isn't itself self-defeating, then you end up in a really incoherent philosophy.
To Gelertner to break the tie, because his latest book was on consciousness.
I have to agree. Also an admirer of Nagel, and the question of consciousness is unsolved. You can argue whether it's important or not. I think most people intuitively believe it's important. I think they're right. But the question of the origins of life and the origins of consciousness are the intellectual bookends of modern science and philosophy, and we can't say much about either of them.
We can't characterize either of them, and if we can't characterize them, we're not really in a position to explain how they emerged. That seems to me a prior commitment, to be able to say what we wish to explain. Someone says, I'm deeply puzzled about consciousness. Everybody says that. It's a very fashionable thing. They say it in Teen Vogue, for heaven's sakes. But I would like to have a better sense of what is prompting the puzzlement. I don't have that. I can't sit in your seat when you're sitting there, so I can't experience your sensations when you're having them. Oh, all right, so what? Why is that intelligible from a scientific or a philosophical point of view as a pressing issue?
If you say most of your friends happen to be automata, we'll turn you into an automata and you'll get a $50 coupon right now where you can spend in Florence. Would you accept the deal or not?
$50 for my consciousness?
Yeah, for you becoming an automata.
Excuse me. No, you're bist du verrückt.
Well, look.
But now you're just dickering over the price.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. But that's true of all intellectual discussions. We're always talking about the price. The price seems to me very low to be puzzled. There are lots of things that are puzzling in the world. Some of them we understand, some of them we don't.
But before you value your consciousness at least at $50.
Yeah, $50 for my consciousness.
At least we've established a floor.
We can go up from there.
I think we're all saying it's a mystery, but we're framing the mystery in different terms.
That's exactly right. It's a puzzle. I'm not even persuaded it's a mystery in the sense which the structure of a natural language
but
is.
Whatever it is, it's valuable to you.
To me, maybe not to you. Okay. Just as yours is valuable to you, but not entirely to me. But we have to be very skeptical about these claims of profundity, because when examined, they don't always remain what they seem. They don't always remain that.
Gentlemen, let me name three names that all but remade modern consciousness. I think the three of you would agree with that formulation when you hear the names. 19th and early 20th century. Karl Marx, no longer taken seriously. A few faculty lounges in American universities. Fundamentally, Karl Marx, no longer taken seriously. Sigmund Freud, fascinating, a few interesting insights, but psychology has now moved so far beyond Freud that at universities across the country, they're renaming the departments of psychology and brain sciences. We're scanning brains. And now we have Darwin, and the three of you are taking him down too. What does this mean for the way people think about the world? He won't go down easily.
No one has taken down Freud. His value doubles every decade.
I'm with David on
that. You are? I'm just wrong about
Freud
that.
Freud rises in my estimation.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, the fact is that the feminists in the 1970s were outraged because of something he said or didn't say in a political way. It has nothing to do with the value of his writing.
But I'm right at 2 out of 3? Marx and Darwin?
Certainly with Marx and Darwin.
Marx is kind of a windbag. Let's agree on that.
kind of bastard, personally.
Yeah, he didn't bathe a whole lot.
A windbag and a bastard.
And he certainly had no sense of style. Darwin is a different case.
I think you're onto something to group them together, because you've talked about how Darwinism, David talked about how Darwinism has become the foundation of a worldview. And if you look at the questions that they address, Darwin tells us where we came from. Marx has a utopian vision of the future. And Freud tells us what to do about our guilt. And between the three of these great materialistic thinkers of the 19th century and early 20th century, they form the basis of a kind of comprehensive materialistic worldview. They answer all the same questions that traditional Judeo-Christian religion has addressed. And so it's understandable when we talk about some of the intense opposition that Darwin skeptics often face, that it's understandable when you realize that it makes sense because you're challenging a fundamental plank in the worldview of many of the scientists. Many scientists equate their worldview of scientific materialism with the practice of science itself. And when you challenge one of the thinkers that supports that worldview, you're going to get a very kind of emotive reaction, and that's often what happens.
Last question here, and I'm going to quote David Gelernter's essay one final time. Darwin now poses a final challenge: whether biology will rise to this last one as well as it did to the first, when his theory upset every apple cart, remains to be seen. How cleanly and quickly can the field get over Darwin and move on? Striking sentence. This is one of the most important questions facing science in the 21st century. Close quote. Is it generational? Does a whole generation of biologists have to die before the field gets over Darwin? What's going to happen here?
Might be generational at the very best. I mean, I think that would be a great outcome, to have the old guard die. But you know, religion is imparted more than anything else by the parents to the children. And the young people have been brought up as little Darwinists. I mean, kids I see running around New Haven are all Darwinists. Anyway, the students in my class are all Darwinists. So these guys know more about it than I do. I'm not hopeful.
Well, I think Darwin is eternal. Because it's
eternal.
Eternal. The name is eternal. The idea is eternal. The belief, the commitment, they're all eternal. The theory will disappear. And good riddance to a bad theory. But no matter
what... it was a beautiful theory.
All right, it's a beautiful theory. Whatever it is, it will disappear. But whatever replaces it will be called Darwinian. No doubt about that. No matter what Christian heresy emerges in the tides of time, it's always called a Christian heresy. This will be a Darwinian heresy. But that legacy, that commemorative legacy, will never disappear. It's part of the history of the subject. Just like Newton will not disappear.
Oh, but Newton... David Gelernter, see, I'm prepared for that one because I read David Gelernter's essay very carefully. And of course, he based it on your work and your work.
Several times.
But as this David says, look, there's a range of physical phenomena, very big things, planets, stars. Newton isn't too good at that. Very tiny things, quantum mechanics, tiny particles we can't see. He's not too good at that. But this huge range, Newton is perfectly predictive. It fits, it comports flawlessly with 98% of human experience.
But that's true.
And Darwin doesn't.
You have to go farther than planets and stars.
Oh, I do?
But you're right.
I think what David Berlinsky is getting at is that Darwinism has filled a niche in our intellectual life that is necessary. You've got to give some kind of account of where all these wonderfully intricate systems we call living organisms came from. And the fundamental commitment of Darwinism is to some kind of bottom-up materialistic account where the molecules get more complex and form more complex molecules and cells, and the cells compete to form more complex organisms. So now what we're getting is post-neo-Darwinian theories of evolution that are trying to provide new mechanisms that will account for the things that the Darwinian mechanism doesn't account for.
So even you, who bear the scars of abuse from Darwinists, say Darwin may have been mistaken in his answers, but he was asking invaluable questions.
He's asking invaluable questions, but I think he got it wrong. I think all Darwinians, in the broad sense, get it wrong. They're trying to explain something very, very complex in terms of bottom-up, undirected processes. And yet what we see in life, complex miniature machines, complex information processing systems, digital code, these are things that bear the hallmark of mind. And they suggest rather a top-down instead of a bottom-up approach. So I'm sure people committed to a materialistic view of things will continue to generate bottom-up explanations. But I think we're in a new day. We're looking at life in light of our own high-tech digital computing technologies and realizing these systems bear all the hallmarks of design. Let's start to look at life differently. And I think looking at it from a bottom-up Darwinian approach is holding science back. We're starting to make predictions based on intelligent design. Some of our guys were the first people to predict that the non-coding regions of the genome, previously identified as junk by the neo-Darwinians, are in fact importantly functional. And so looking at life as a design system is actually yielding insights into how life works.
It's a new day. You'll go with that?
Yeah, sort of. There's been big changes. Let's put it this way. I think what we have determined is that Darwin created a 19th century local theory, without looking at extreme cases, that was reasonably successful for breeders, for the explanation of local characteristics like beak size or the growth of wings, but he entirely failed to explain what he thought he was explaining, the emergence of biological complexity on the species level or higher order levels. It was a premature question to address an audience about the origin of species. He couldn't say anything about what he did not know, what he could not comprehend. And the fact that he did not know or could not comprehend these things is simply a reflection of the fact that we do not know or cannot comprehend those things in the 21st century. So the question addressed was widely premature in the 19th century. It's still premature. We're just learning the structure of intellectual inquiry necessary to understand something like the biological cell. And it's much harder a problem than we ever suspected. Much harder.
David Gelernter, last word to you. Do you concur?
It is much harder. Yeah, absolutely, it's a fantastically difficult problem. We'll solve it, but it's not going to be simple.
David Gelernter, author most recently of The Tides of Consciousness, thank you. David Berlinski, author of many books, all three of you, author of many books, but author in this case, the relevant volume is The Deniable Darwin and Other Essays, and Steve Meyer, who's book. In this case, the relevant book is Darwin's Doubt. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you to my friends.
Yeah. I'm Peter Robinson for Uncommon Knowledge, the Hoover Institution, and Fox Nation. Thank you.
Again, that was Peter Robinson of Uncommon Knowledge speaking with Yale University's David Gelernter, along with Stephen Meyer and David Berlinski, whose books strongly influenced Gelernter's recent public break with Darwinism. Be sure to visit idthefuture.com to hear the first two parts of their conversation. And thanks again to Peter Robinson and the Hoover Institution for permission to present this interview here at ID the Future. This is Tom Gilson. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.